people who love them.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai. This is The Thing About Cars. And at the table, we have some of our usual crew. Ben, are you there?
I'm here.
And Becca.
Hello.
And we have a special guest today, Don Randolph. How are you, Don?
I'm great, Mickey.
I'm so glad you get to join us today, finally, after so many, I guess, weeks or months of hoping to make this happen. So, but just because you're a newcomer to the show, please tell us what your interest in cars is. How deep does it go?
Oh, gosh. My interest and love of cars goes back to being a little kid. When I was born, my dad and mom had, I believe, a 1964 Corvette. And I was born in Maryland, and my dad was stationed in Fort Meade, you know, some post around there. And they used to drive me back and forth in that car to Pittsburgh when they'd go visit our family. And that Corvette was absolutely stunning to see my little baby carriage in the back as they try to get it out of the car. I think the carriage was bigger than the Corvette. And my dad constantly says, I said, oh, I loved your little red Corvette. He said it was Honduras red. He was very adamant about that. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a thing. And then my uncles were both in cars, professionally mechanics, body shop owners, sold cars their whole lives. And so I just grew up around that, but also being an Army brat, you know, just going to other countries. My it's amazing. My first, I didn't drive until I was in my 20s, because in Europe, you just, mm-hmm. you don't get yeah. your license at 16. Right. And it was fascinating. I learned to drive in a Chevy van, and my parallel parking was between a Mercedes and a BMW. Wow. And let me tell you, an 8-cylinder Chevy can go pretty fast on the Autobahn. So that's just, I really have loved cars my whole life. I'm not, you know, gearhead in terms of all the technicalities, but I used to make model cars when I was a kid. And my first real car of my own purchase was a Probe Ford. And it's, that car was hilarious. And then my big buy when I was 40 was a CLK 320 Mercedes with convertible, nice soft top. So, you know, I think cars are one of those things that it really gets underneath your skin. And whether you're very mechanical or just the love of the automobile and the beauty of its make and the models and the variations of it, it's just a beautiful machine.
Can you do the DIY thing?
You know, sometimes I'm working on some hydraulics for my CLK. It was hit really bad, and I worked with my mechanic to save it because they wanted to total it back in 2006 and or 16, I think. And I was like, no, you know, do everything you can. So I've done some DIY more in that structural piece than in the inside. Although we just did some stuff with the battery the other day. And so, yeah, a little bit, as much as I can, but can't put it up on anything to really get underneath.
Well, I'm glad you're at the microphone with us today. We don't really have a solid agenda for any of our shows, but I like to ask for listener topics and things like that, and see if any of our own folks have, you know, things to put up on the board, and then we can just discuss them. And that sort of becomes our loosely defined agenda for each show. But Ben, I believe, has said he actually has a trivia item for us. So Ben, you want to do Grand Trivia Auto this week?
Oh, well, wait. I wanted to do a side item just on something that Don said. I understand loving a car so much and trying to save it. But as a side note, my Pontiac G8 that if you've ever listened and heard me talk about, the poor G8, 120 days after I bought it, and this is a hard to get your hands on car, somebody hit it, and I'm trying to make a very long story short, and they tried to total it out. And we went through all this just craziness to get it repaired, and that's when the problem started. So all the issues that have led to... and yeah, some of it was the DOD system that never should have been in there, but trying to save it when it had been badly damaged just started that ball rolling. So things started going wrong after that. So just be very careful with that.
You know, actually, my car has been doing great. It was all body. It was, you know, they had to pull the frame, you know, in the back, but it was hit square on. That little car was hit by a huge Lincoln Navigator. Mm-hmm. I was at a full stop. That car was going 40 miles an hour. That car saved my life. I was like, I'm going to save your life. So I had no really mechanical issues, you know, just pulled the frame and we got like new quarter panels and back and the hood, the back trunk, and then just some little things. And actually it drives like a dream. It's a great vehicle, awesome. Especially on
good.
When you want to do some Sunday driving, it's fabulous.
Okay. Sorry.
No, we can do Sunday driving every day right now.
All right.
Exactly. No, we want to definitely come back to that. But first I want to get our Grand Trivia Auto question in, and then we can answer it at the end of the episode. So, Ben, take it away.
All right. Well, this one goes to the truck world a little bit. Studebaker made a few pickup trucks. They came out with one called the Champ in 1960 that had borrowed a lot of things from the Lark sedan. But it had one interesting feature, which was the first on any pickup truck produced, I believe, anywhere, especially the United States. Was it shift-on-the-fly four-wheel drive, a sliding rear cab window, a bed light, or automatically locking front hubs?
Hmm. Interesting.
And we will come back to that at the end of the show.
Yeah, I have a guess, but we'll definitely have to come back to that at the end of the show. You know, we are still obviously recording during pandemic, thanks to the wonders of the internet. And one of the things that we should talk about today is, as Robin said, every day is now a Sunday drive. Not Robin, Dawn.
Who was Robin?
I don't know. Who's Robin? Where did
Freudian
that come from?
Slip thing?
I don't know. Have we ever talked to a Robin on the show before?
Do you know a Robin?
Only from Batman.
I know one, but she's never been on the show.
Yeah, that's so weird. Forgive me, Dawn.
No worries.
Every day is a Sunday drive. I mean, it's true. I drove up and down the interstate the other day. It was mostly empty. In some parts of the world, like when I talk to my wife, I can hear the motorcycle races going up and down the interstate. Like, but what do you think?
It is still, it almost seems like business as usual out here. I'm, you know, a different side of Atlanta than you, but there is still a hubbub going on out here. I don't know.
Yeah, I think cars give us the freedom. Yeah, even if you don't get out, if you just take, like we've been doing, taking the convertible out and putting the top down and just driving around. And then it's like, wow, this is so freeing.
You get out of the house while you're still in a quarantine. I've done the same thing, throwing the kids in the cars. Like, we need to go see Sky.
Yes. And boy, the sky is blue. I mean, yes. It is just beautiful.
When you've been stuck in a house, yes, it is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm you know, one of my soapbox issues, because I have not been in a very good frame of mind lately, I confess. I have been in a very frustrated, I don't even know what adjectives to use anymore. It's just, I'm
just
an
extrovert.
I'm an extrovert, and being an extrovert in quarantine times is very, very hard. It takes all your normal malaise and it magnifies it because you have to look at it all day.
Mm-hmm.
But getting out to drive is a ton of fun. And the weird, almost hypocritical soapbox issue that I have on the matter is, you know, we have all these cultural changes that the world has made in order to contend with pandemic. And I hope we get to keep them, right? I hope we get to realize things like, and teleworking is actually better for the world and better for the people. I hope we get the, you know, value that the lack of particulate matter in the air is actually good for everybody. And, you know, as a guy who likes to drive good old fashioned gas burners, it sort of seems wrong for me to say that. But on the other hand, we have lessons we can learn here. Why don't we learn them, you know?
Right.
Right.
And because of that, driving is so much more pleasurable. I mean, really driving, not being bumper to bumper, sitting in traffic. But I actually, in fascination in Georgia, we've got 400 and people have been dragging up there. And I think to myself, yeah, I'd like to just take the car and maybe not go over the speed limit, but go for a good long time without having to put that brake on. great. You know, that's the fun of driving, not just the transportation piece. So I hope, like you said, Mickey, we can get to the point where driving is the fun part and not just the commuting part.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I have noticed, though, that the police have been out with a little more frequency. Like the first time I drove, it was like 3 weeks in the pandemic, and I'm like, screw it, I'm leaving the house. And I got on the interstate in my old Honda Accord, and I got it well into the 90s. I'm going to go ahead and admit it. And I'm thinking, and I'm lucky I thought this in advance. I'm like, I'll just take the next exit. And sure enough, under that bridge, if I had not taken that exit, was, you know, Clayton County Police just sitting there clocking folks. And I'm like, yeah, they're taking advantage of the Sunday drivers. They're taking advantage of the folks who are liking the open highway.
Wait, I thought Sunday drivers were slow drivers.
I thought Sunday drivers were folks who were tooling around because of the open roads.
Yeah.
Probably some of each.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, there's the Sunday thing. I guess they think by driving slowly, they're not doing work on the Lord's Day or something. I don't know.
You know, when we came back from Germany, we had a 1969 Mercedes coupe that a woman had kept in her garage in Germany just to take to church on Sundays.
Well, that's what I was going to point out. There's so many stories about the old lady that only drove it to church, and that's where the whole Sunday driver thing came from.
Yep. But yet I know she took that car on that Autobahn because it was a nice little six cylinder and it just flew. I got to drive it when we brought it back to the States. It was the first car I drove to my first job, and that car was smooth driving. It was a little beat up on the inside. It was, you know, definitely worse for wear on the inside, but on the outside and in the engine, it purred like a kitten.
What kind of car did you say it was, Dawn?
It was a 1969 coupe hardtop six-cylinder Mercedes. So I want to say it was like probably a 350.
Yeah.
Sweet car.
Oh, very.
Well, while we're on the topic of pandemic driving, Dawn, you said you had had some words of advice on how to properly disinfect your car and keep it bug-free.
Yes. You know, when this started, I had some hydrochloric acid, just, you know, stuff that you would clean surfaces with. And I was thinking, I wonder what is the proper thing that we need to use. And actually, one of the car interior makers, I believe it's pronounced Yanfeng Automotive Interiors, put out a piece in mid-March from Consumer Reports and said, using good old warm soap and water, wiping everything down, you know, going ahead and scrubbing it is the best thing, because you're breaking up the molecules of the virus and just doing that on a regular basis. If you want to do a little bit more of a deep clean, an alcohol solution with at least 70% alcohol, like a basic isopropyl alcohol, their executive director of Global Initiative, Jeff Stout, said, you know, go ahead and use that. He said, stay away from bleach and hydrogen peroxide. They will kill the virus, but they will also damage your car's upholstery pretty seriously.
Yes, hydrogen peroxide would bleach it, but I'm also concerned about the alcohol. If people try to use that on a leather or a faux leather, that it would dry it out. It would have to be followed by a conditioner to save the material.
And you are spot on, Becca. And that's what he said. If you feel like you've got to use that isopropyl, follow it up with a good, actually go ahead and do the soap and water again. Mm-hmm. So you get any residual off, and then do a good, cleaning and detailing and protecting the coating of the surface. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really good. And, you know, just get in the habit. I thought it could bring it back, driving gloves.
I will point out, however, that the alcohol is a-okay to use on the plastic that most car interiors are made of, and I know this from experience, because back when I lived in Texas, there was a place I worked there where there was no shady place to park whatsoever, and I had this 91 Acura. I had a huge windscreen. It was a greenhouse. The steering wheel would get so damn hot every day, and I tried all kinds of things to try to get that wheel cool enough to grip to drive home, including dousing it with alcohol for about a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was interesting. I thought Consumer Reports did a good job of talking about how to protect your fat. If you don't have leather or faux leather, how to protect your fabric. You might want to go ahead and put buy one of those covers for it and take those out once a week and throw them in the washing machine. So there, I think people need to be aware, but at the same time, you've got to don't use those bleach products or those harsh chemicals. Be consistent and wash your hands.
Oh yeah.
Right. Before and after.
I think it might have been the CDC that had released a report or a write-up or something, and people have been passing it around, just the ins and outs of the virus itself and how to kill it. And with it having a basic coating, soap does defeat this virus.
Yes.
It has an extraordinarily long lifetime outside of its host. I was shocked to hear that it could last more than 48 hours outside just sitting on a surface, but they did say it didn't have any kind of resilient shell. So soap and water, you don't need to go overboard just thoroughly. And it could be something as simple for fabrics as Lysol. You would have to be thorough, obviously, and it's best to always clean, but you don't have to look for the harshest chemical out there. You can easily defeat it. You just need to thoroughly clean.
You know, that's the speaking to Don's soap and water point, I would never have thought to use just plain old soap and water on the mm-hmm. interior surfaces of my car. Soap and water in my mind is for the outside, and that's great. But yeah, if you do it right, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to soap and water the internals.
Well, to give you a little science alert here, the reason it works, danger, science content ahead. yeah, the outside of a virus is basically made of lipid molecules.
Yes. Fat. I didn't go that far, yes.
Right. And that's exactly what soap breaks up. It breaks up the shell of a virus for the same chemical reasons that it breaks up the grease on a pan in your kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good old Dawn and water. I love it.
Oh yeah,
the Blue Dawn, the original Blue Dawn.
Exactly.
I want to do our listener comment before we get into Ben's Lotus update. I'm eagerly looking forward to Ben's Lotus update, but let's get this listener comment down first. This is from our friend Robin. This is why I transposed names earlier, right?
There you go.
Robin, my friend Robin says this comment isn't so much about cars, but how we use cars during the current unpleasantness. He says specifically and locally, there's a group, and he lives up in Oregon. He says there's a group that's been organizing cruises whereby they drive by places to cheer people up. 100 or so cars and trucks, and these are show cars. These are not, you know, daily drivers. 100 or so cars and trucks slowly cruising down neighborhood streets. It's very cool, just driving, no burnouts or other lawless behavior tolerated. But it has also run afoul of one town's police department, who have responded by pulling people over for very, very minor infractions. The police say cruises violate the governor's orders to limit travel to only that necessary. The cruisers say it's in keeping with social distancing policies and does no harm. Rather, it is a way to help ease people's sense of isolation. And right. Anyway, I can see.
I understand their point. I mean, technically they're sheltering in place, but their place moves. They're in a car, they're in a bubble for all intents and purposes. They're quarantined, you know, they're just.
Now to back up a little bit, are they driving by people who they're going to someone they want to cheer up with their presence. Is that what, did I catch that correctly?
Yeah, okay. That's correct. To my understanding, they're just driving through neighborhoods and giving people something nice to look at.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. sounds like a social good, so I can see where both sides of this have a point. It may violate the letter of the law, but I don't think it really violates the spirit of it.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on how strict you want to be about the governor's orders, you know, and I think we need every excuse we can to lighten up these days.
Sure. Right. And now there is one little thing you could say, though, about it, against it, which is that it raises, even though nobody's acting a fool, there is nevertheless the chance somebody could have a crash or something, which raises the issue of tying up emergency services that might be needed elsewhere, you know, and their job is more difficult with all this going on.
Yeah, and I think if I were the law enforcement, I would figure out a way to be partial helpful in this, like
sure.
cordoning off areas or being the lead in the end of something like that, where, you know, it's somebody's birthday or grandma just turned 100 years old and they just want to parade by. And granted, if they're in beautiful cars, I want to protect those vehicles. So I think yeah. they should take the more proactive approach to it.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a chance for law enforcement to step up and actually be part of the celebration instead of part of someone else's problem.
I've also wondered how many people who have recreational vehicles and RVs have taken to, you know, their family out in nature. And I think that would be a really healthy thing to do. If you're all self-contained, you've got all of your necessities there and you're going out into nature and you're taking the kids and you're seeing a lake and going fishing or hunting. I think they should, anybody should have, that should have been part of any order to allow people to come out into the wilderness and enjoy nature.
Well, right. the other side of that is that in the very beginning of pandemic, we were seeing folks who were crowding national parks and state parks. And
the lakes around this area, I've got Lake Allatoona up here, and every single parking area where you can load boats or go off to camping areas, they were overflowing. It was insane, almost hard to get through some of the roads. There were so many people crowding the lakes and parks and stuff out here.
Hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, you know, it's cars. It's cars tooling around a neighborhood, and they're trying to be lawful. So anyway,
yeah,
I think they should enjoy themselves.
I agree. Because, I mean, just to keep people's spirits up, you know, you got to get outside.
Speaking of getting our spirits up, Ben, tell us about your Lotus.
Okay, well, I don't really remember what the last update consisted of, but I think it was the engine going back together, which it has been, but I've run into another snag with it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so I had the head off and the water pump and front cover, everything taken apart. I had some, you know, leaks and some damaged threads to deal with, things like that. It looked all very good. It was going back together. I had everything but the cam cover back on, and I did a last check of the valve clearances, which I had adjusted along the way, and they were not looking very good, which was a little bit puzzling. So I ordered some more shims, put a new set back in, checked them again, and they were, many of them were too far the other way. A lot of really weird, nonsensical things were happening here. So I take some pictures, write up some notes, and I get in the enthusiast forum to ask the more experienced hands if they know what's going on. And after providing a little more information, it now looks like I'm probably going to have to pull the head off again.
Oh no.
Well, which is not that big a deal as far as the physical work goes. Most of it's done already. I've just got to, you know, unhook the timing chain and, you know, undo 10 big nuts and lift it straight off. The good news there is that we do have an expert right here in the local area who knows more about these things than, or has forgotten more about these things than most of us will ever learn, as the saying goes. He's one of these, you know, old grizzled, you know, racing mechanics.
Is that the guy whose shop we visited that day, Ben?
That's him. Yes. There's a guy named Bob who, you know, he still fixes race cars. You know, whenever they have the historic races out at Road Atlanta, you know, that season is really busy for him because he's the guy, whenever something blows up on the track, one of these, you know, 50, 60 year old race cars, he's the guy who fixes a lot of them.
Yeah. His shop is indicator for anybody who's wondering, and we'll try to get him on the show sometime now that you mention it.
I understand he's moving. I don't know where to, and I hope he's not right in the middle of the move when I want to bring my head down to him, but I'm going to have him go through the valve train, you know, check all the clearances on the cam bearings and the tappets and everything and make sure it's all up and up, because it was rebuilt probably 2,000 miles max ago by a previous owner. Who had it done by a shop up in Salt Lake City who may not have had the right expertise. It all looked pretty good on paper, but I think they may have neglected a few things. So I'm going to have Bob give it a look and go through the head. And then once that's done, yeah, it sets me back some time, but I've got time right now. Once I have had him go through the head, I can really be confident about it. And then maybe I'll really start getting somewhere.
Very cool. And we've running out of time as our, yeah, I saw the thing. What's the Lotus factory update, Ben?
Well, what's going on there is, and this is something that's easier for these small, you know, high-end manufacturers to do as far as commitments go, but they have committed to phasing out internal combustion engines. And in that spirit, they have just announced that their last internal combustion engine powered car is going to be coming out next year.
Really?
They'll be all electric after that. Yeah.
Lotus is going all electric after that?
Wow.
They are, yes.
I know. That's
Wow.
And well, I think in a certain way, Colin Chapman's ghost is probably okay with it because he was always looking for faster and better. And, you know, Lotus right now, of course, has belonged to the Geely Group out of China for a few years. They've got an amazing amount of parts bin and R&D know-how and cash available to develop these things.
Well, Tesla made a lot of their information public information too.
And oh, yes.
And while I knock on electric cars quite a bit because I'm a good old-fashioned gas kind of girl, they still make really good electric cars, and I would think that would help a lot, that information.
And they're stupid fast.
Yes.
I was going to say, too, last year, Lotus brought out the Avia, I think is how it's pronounced. It's this electric halo car that they're only going to make 130 of, and they cost $2 million or something. And a lot of what's in that is going to trickle down to this car that's going to be, or the car that's going to be coming out after the last gas burner they introduce next year, which is supposed to be in a lower market slot than the Evora, which is the only thing they sell in the United States right now. Not that much lower because it's going to start at the equivalent of 68,000 US, but it'll still be somewhat below the Evora's market slot. It'll basically be an Elise replacement.
It'll have to be. Yeah.
A little too rich for me.
It's an exciting development. You know, I think as always the question for many people is going to be infrastructure. You know, we have the global infrastructure for gas burners. We don't have a global infrastructure for electrical motors.
No, we don't. And, you know, I am very much into the energy side of things. And the question is, who is responsible for building out that infrastructure? It's something that we, you know, when you're driving an electrical vehicle, you're constantly thinking, what's the max, 300 miles maybe? And then you have to wait overnight to get it charged if you have a trickle charge compared to a fast charge that some of the Tesla stations have. So the infrastructure build out for electrical is really going to be fascinating.
It is in progress though.
Yes. I mean, a lot of the new, tiered parking decks now are requiring so many slots be designated for electrical vehicles so that when you get there, you plug in, and when you leave, you pull out.
And it's relatively easy to add that to a parking deck. It's not as if they have to rip up a wall to put in a conduit to handle that kind of juice. You can easily put it in. I'm sorry, go ahead, Ben.
Oh, I was going to say some of the interesting side effects of that infrastructure. Well, they built a Tesla station near my place. I believe it has 10 spaces, and I was shocked to actually see 7 or 8 of them full one day. I didn't know there was that much density of the product in my neighborhood. But I've also found that if you go on something like Google Maps and find where the charging stations are, at least the Tesla super stations, some of them have some really interesting user reviews. Some of them are quite cute. There was one in Delaware, I think, that I saw that someone left this review that said, oh, this poor charging station, it's only got a liquor store and a gas station next to it. Nothing fun while you're waiting for your charge. It has so much unrealized potential.
You know what we need to make then?
What's that?
A drive-in movie theater that's all charging ports.
Oh, that'd be excellent.
So you sit there and watch a movie or something and you charge.
Yeah.
Get as much of a charge as you can in the space of 2 hours anyway. That would be good.
Yeah, sure. Or it could be a dating venue, a new word for hookup.
Yeah.
How long does it take to charge on a quick charge?
I have heard it could be as minimum as 2 hours.
Okay.
Some of the Tesla stations, I think, are good for 30 minutes for a full charge.
Yeah, I think it's pretty, it can be enough that you can get something done substantially or in a period of time and then move on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we are rapidly coming to the end of this episode. Yeah. Ben, we have to do our answer for the Grand Trivia Auto.
That's right. So with the 1960 Studebaker Champ pickup, this truck introduced a popular feature that's on many, many trucks today. Was it the automatic front hub locking, shift on the fly, four-wheel drive, a bed light, or a sliding cab window?
Or there was the hub locking. Was separate.
Yeah, that was the first one I just mentioned. Yeah,
he said it. He just, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was separate the first time that it was the...
What's your guess, Becca?
Sorry. Okay. I'll go with that one. That works.
I'm going with the sliding window.
And I'm going to go with automatic locking hubs.
Well, the correct answer is the sliding window.
Ah, yay.
I believe it was introduced the second year this truck was made, 1961. And it was just two panes with a split down the middle. You could slide the left over to the right or the right over to the left. The little center one that slides either way, I think, came later from probably from the aftermarket. But this Studebaker Champ was the first truck to have a sliding rear window.
That's hilarious. That's great.
And it's a desirable feature if you're looking to buy an old Champ now. It's kind of, it'll definitely boost the price up a bit.
I think my grandfather had one of those. That's why I remember it. Because you can stick your head out the back. Yeah.
If I ever make any money again, I'll have to look at Studebakers.
They are cool.
So that is all the time we have for today. Thanks, you guys, for being at the table. And thanks to our listeners, always, for joining us and being part of the Thing About Cars family. We love getting your feedback on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you find the podcast. As always, your listener comments and questions are valuable to us, and we hope we can get to all of them. You can contact us via the Facebook page for the Thing About Cars or our website, always, thethingaboutcars.com. In the meantime, we hope you guys are staying safe. And we look forward to seeing you again with another episode in about a week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.